From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of February, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing. We'll hear from Roman Horobots. He is the farmer from Ukraine that we've talked to occasionally over the past year since Russia invaded that nation about conditions on the ground where he is. He'll take that up today and we'll hear more from him again later in the week. And then as we close out our time together on this Wednesday, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Oh, and don't forget to get yourself registered for that all-day ag outlook. It's less than 2 weeks away. The cost is $30. I hope to see you in Covington at the Beef House.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn today settled at $6.74. That was 6.5 lower. The May down 6.25 at $6.74 and a quarter. In December futures, $5.92 for the new crop, down 4.5 cents. March soybeans, $15.39.5, 9.25 lower. November, $13.95.5, down 3.5 cents. The bean meal futures at $4.92.60, $5.10 lower. Bean oil up 6 cents at $62.83. Soft red winter wheat down 14 at 7.36.5 for the day. The hard red at 8.76, down 28.25. Live cattle futures settled at $165.75, 2.5 cents lower. The feeder cattle at $187.97.5, up $1.10, and lean hogs at $86.55, down $2.55. Crude oil at $73.98 a barrel, down $2.36. Gasoline down 7.1 cents at $2.55.1 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 33,134, down 28 points. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, here in Champaign County. Although, Greg, you're at the iHotel today for a GrowMark event?
That's right. GrowMark has a growers meeting, and I was doing the Grain Outlook presentation this morning, and now we're taking a little bit of a break right now before the next speaker comes on. So, yeah, I'm out of the office today.
Did the farmers smile and nod, and were they happy with your outlook?
Yeah, my takeaway was short-term friendly, long-term maybe not so friendly. Maybe we want to get something done ahead of the March 31 planting intentions report, but that still gives us 5 weeks.
Yeah, so the prospective planting retention report is a bit away. However, tomorrow, USDA's Ag Forum kicks off in Washington, D.C., and at 6 a.m., I'll try to get these on the website and certainly on my Twitter account as long as I'm up and about. They'll release the updated numbers for the coming year, likely to use the numbers they already have. These are kind of officially unofficial numbers. They'll massage the acreage figures, I think. What's trade expecting?
Trade is expecting 91 million acres of corn. That's up from last year, and 89 million acres of beans, which is also up from last year, but not as much as the corn. So 91 and 89 are the numbers that the trade's looking for. And as you said, this acreage number tomorrow is USDA or the Ag Outlook Forum's best guess based on information they have, but it's not based on actual farmer surveys, which won't be until the March 31 report. So this is something to trade off of, but as far as accuracy is concerned, I think they've overstated acreage 11 of the last 16 years in corn, overstated the acreage in beans 7 of the last 16. So it's about a 50-50 shot as far as whether the numbers will eventually get raised or lowered, but it's the best that we've got to go off of, and we will trade off of those numbers tomorrow.
Yeah, it is just a working number by USDA's account, and then that prospective plantings report, which is about 85,000 surveys across the nation on all types of crops that they are asking farmers about what they'll be putting in the ground. That'll be released at the end of the month of March, and then those get rolled into the first official 2023-24 growing season numbers, which aren't due out until the WASDE figures in the month of May. Other things we probably ought to talk about, I want you to look back over the three-day holiday weekend. The markets were closed on Monday for President's Day. President Biden made a visit in the mean space to Kyiv and Poland, and we had a frost in Argentina, parts of southern Brazil. Those both played out. Are they kind of done things in the market at this time?
I think President Biden's visit to Ukraine just put reinforced in people's minds that the war is still going on and is probably not going to end anytime soon. It looks like the one-year anniversary is later this week, and you know, people thought initially it would be a relatively short war. Well, that didn't turn out to be the case, and it looks like it's going to continue on. And the longer it goes on, the more that will affect Ukraine's ability to produce and export both corn and wheat. So it was mildly supportive, I think, to the commodity markets.
And Ukraine, Russia, and Turkey still trying to work out if they can extend the grain corridor and whether it will remain open. That's happening this week, too.
I think the talks start either this week or next week. The existing agreement runs through mid-March, through March 15th. And so hopefully with these negotiations that are going to be starting soon, that they can get something worked out prior to March 15th. Otherwise, we'll have a disruption of exports out of Ukraine.
Over and over and over the last 2 weeks on our air, analysts and academics and most everybody else had said you really need to begin to ramp up your new crop sales, if you haven't already, for corn particularly. And certainly your old crop sales should be made for both products, corn and soybeans. Have farmers reacted to that, in your opinion?
Not yet. The market has gone sideways. We're up a little bit 1 week. We're down a little bit next week. If you look at the prices over the last 5 months, we're really not that much change from where we were. So there hasn't been a big penalty or an incentive for farmers to sell. But as we start getting closer to the March 31 acreage number, start getting closer to the spring planting season, there will probably be a market move. And so we are trying to encourage farmers. I guess I'm in the same camp as all the other experts that you've been talking to. Farmers probably do need to get some corn, both old crop and new crop corn, sold here before the 31st of March.
Is basis supporting that?
Basis hasn't changed a whole lot on corn. Bean basis has weakened a little bit as we get closer to the South American harvest and export season, taking some of our export business away. But so far, the corn basis is just steady. Farmers haven't had to sell a lot, so that hasn't had to pressure the basis, but export demand and other demand is just kind of steady. So basis levels just steady for both corn and beans at this point.
Hey, thanks much. Have a great day there with GrowMark at the I Hotel.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing. Oh, and by the way, I look forward to having you over at the Beef House, too, on the 7th day of March.
Definitely looking forward to that.
Me, too. That's Greg Johnson. He's with TGM, Total Grain Marketing. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. And he'll be at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March, in Covington, Indiana, for the All Day Ag Outlook. He, along with 9 other commodity analysts that you hear on the air here, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Mark Cheney from John Deere, along with the whole of the FarmDoc team, will be there. I hope you will, too. We kick off in the morning. Details online at willag.org with Eric. Prior to that, you'll get coffee and a cinnamon roll from the Beef House, and at the noon hour, their meal, all for just $30. Join us at the Beef House for the All Day Ag Outlook. Register now online at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Periodically over the last year, I've let you listen in on some conversations I've had with Roman Horovitz. He's a farmer in eastern Ukraine. About a month ago, I wrote him a note and asked if we could talk again. And we just hadn't gotten together, but earlier this week, he wrote me a note and said, you know, I think I need to get up on the radar. I had no idea what that meant. And at the time, he did not know that the President of the United States was going to be visiting his country. I frankly was worried about why he thought he should be up on the radar, but as it turns out, it had a lot more to do with Joe Biden's visit than you might expect, and some of the things that have been happening in his part of the world for the last 2 weeks. He did tell me that about 2 hours before President Biden arrived in Kyiv, that there were a lot of rumors around that particular visit, and, well, he simply thought they had to be a myth.
And then, after 2 hours, you know, this myth became reality. And I was, believe me or not, but I was glad because, you know, it's a very good sign for our country and also for you know, the whole world that nobody's afraid of Putin anymore. And it was a great sign. It was a great sign that the United States, our closest ally, and also Joe Biden is not afraid of Putin, because, you know, all of the Ukraine is active battlefield, and he just, against off odds, he just appeared here. I don't know all of the logistics, how he came here and which type of transportation he used, but for last couple of weeks, here at my region, we had a lot of jet fighters flying around. They were practicing a lot. And, you know, when you see jet fighters, it's a very good sign all the time. Because, you know, it seems that our air defense system works. It means that our sky is quite open for our jet fighters and probably some military transportation planes and helicopters as well. Because at the beginning of the war, we didn't have much of aircrafts in the air. And I'm not speaking about civil aircrafts or commercial aircrafts, because our sky is completely closed for those types of flying machines.
At this point, we switched gears, and I started to talk with Roman about the last year and the farming operation and the kinds of issues that he'd had as it related to logistics and just being on the ground in a war zone. However, when we finished up, he came back to President Biden's visit, and in particular to how he sees the relationship between the United States and Ukraine.
And also, probably it will better speak off the record, but I have some my personal opinion about, U.S. and Ukraine relationships. I hope Ukraine won't be fiasco, and it will be a very good case for upcoming generations that with a lot of support from the most powerful country in the world, relatively small country in Europe can make its future of normal development and, getting rid and free from the biggest abuser, because Russia has been our biggest abuser for centuries. So that's why, personally, myself, I'm very glad that our countries have such relationships. And also, you know, I spent some time in the United States, and I have my degree from American University, and part of United States living inside of me. And, that's why I'm so optimistic about our outcome and about our country's relationship development. And I hope and I strongly believe that it will be a success story.
We'll hear more from Roman Horovitz over the next couple of days. He's a farmer in eastern Ukraine, not far from the Dnieper River, which divides Ukraine roughly in half. We'll talk about what the last growing season was like and his expectations for the coming growing season. I think you'll find some of it surprising and certainly of interest. By the way, he is a Penn State graduate, and while it's not Illinois, the Nittany Lions are part of the Big Ten. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I think we have a lot of ground to cover in both North and South America. Let's begin with the winter storm that's making its way across the northern part of the United States. Can you tell me about conditions and issues, problems, and who's going to get what?
Yes. Well, we already, of course, have some significant snow on the ground in the eastern parts of the Dakotas and Minnesota. So we want to start with that. With that knowledge, the snow depths are already up to about 10 inches, in fact, more than 10 inches in some locations. That's important because when we get through adding the new snowfall there, we'll probably be pushing close to 20 inches in some areas. And that's a lot of moisture, that is going to be tied up in the snow and ready to melt at some point. We are, believe it or not, getting closer to spring. And so the potential for a meltdown of the snow becomes higher as we move into March and April. And so keeping an eye on the Red River Basin area, the upper Midwest, is probably a really good idea. In the meantime, travel conditions are really rough today from South Dakota through southern Minnesota over to Michigan. Much of that area just described, getting some moderate to heavy snow that will turn into a little mini blizzard as we go forward through the afternoon and tonight. We just to the south of that, we will see a band of notable freezing rain, sleet, and snow mix. It looks like areas coming out of eastern Iowa into the northernmost part of Illinois and southernmost Wisconsin and on into southern Michigan. And really farther east into New York will probably be experiencing some notable icing conditions. And the greatest ice accumulation looks like it's going to be in southern Michigan. There's going to be trees and power lines down as a result of this. So there's going to be some power issues that are going to have to be dealt with as we go forward through the night tonight and tomorrow. To the south of this, rain will fall. We expect a few rumbles of thunder, too, across Illinois and Missouri, eventually into Indiana. Not necessarily heavy amounts of rainfall in these areas, but certainly enough to keep the ground wet. And so as we get closer to spring, we'll have plenty of moisture around. And out farther to the west, light snow will occur in some of the hard red winter wheat country. Now, this will likely include Nebraska, the northwestern one-third of Kansas into Colorado. Not necessarily heavy snow in those areas, but just enough to help protect those crops from temperatures that will go down below zero tonight and especially tomorrow night. And then we'll start warming up. You know, it got real warm ahead of this, so putting down some snow and protecting that crop is important.
On that note, are there places where dormancy has been broken in the United States?
We are advancing very quickly in that direction across the southern plains. We've seen temperatures work their way up into the 70s and 80s in the last couple of days across the southern plains, and now moving into the lower Ohio River Valley, the Delta, and the southeastern states. All those areas will be in the 70s and some lower 80s this afternoon. The heat will continue for another day or two, but it will progressively turn cooler from northwest to southeast through those areas as we go from Thursday into Friday. So there will be a little bit of a break, but we are warming the soil very quickly, and there's plenty of moisture there. So greening of some of the wheat and maybe just a little bit of more aggressive new development occurring in some of the warmer areas of Texas is probably going to occur as we go forward. Now, all the cold air that's responsible for the snow and ice we talked about is going to stay in the northern part of the country. And so this warmer bias in the southern states, even though there'll be a little bit of a cool down, is not going to go away. And we'll see the warmer air come back northward again over the weekend and into early next week. And so we'll end up with well over a week of temperatures in the afternoons in the 60s, 70s, and even some lower 80s. So wheat development in the southern part of the U.S. is definitely going to be occurring. which is not a big deal until we get down the road. If we don't see some freezes coming up in March, I do see cold air coming in April that could put some of that crop at risk if it hasn't had a freeze since, you know, by that point. But of course, we're talking many weeks, and there's a lot of potential for change down the road. So it's just something to think about for now.
Speaking of potential for change, drought in South America, we've been talking about Argentina for months now. It's still the growing season there, though they had a frost over the weekend. Have you assessed the kind of damage and how widespread that might have been?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time with that today, actually, as I received some more data. Really, the coldest weather in Argentina was mostly in west central and northwestern Cordoba, which is actually one of the most important agricultural provinces in the country. But those western areas are a little bit more of a fringe area of production. And looking at the soybean distribution by agricultural district down that way, it looks like a very small portion of the crop was hurt in a dramatic way. Now, temperatures did get down as low as minus 2.8 Celsius, which is probably the equivalent of about 27 degrees Fahrenheit. And we're talking about, you know, the, what was it, the 21st or 22nd of February? No, couldn't have been that. It was probably more like the 18th or 19th, last Saturday, whatever. The bottom line is that that's crazy. We had cold weather like that in 2004 in the Northern Plains and parts of Canada's prairies, and that occurred around mid-August. So that'd be somewhat of a similar event. There was all kinds of damage that occurred from that event in 2004 in the U.S. and Canada. But back in Argentina, these crops were in various stages of development. Some of the soybeans there's a late crop there, and there's also an early crop. The early crops were pretty far advanced. But again, this area that was impacted by the freezes and the more significant frost was really western fringe areas of crop country. The bulk of Argentina's summer crops saw temperatures of about 35 Fahrenheit up to about 45. There were a few other areas where temperatures did get down just above freezing, so there was frost scattered in quite a few areas. But the only damaging frost that really cut into the crop's production potential was confined to that west central and northwest area of Cordoba and a small pocket in east central San Luis. But everybody else, I think, is going to come through this without a lot of negative impact. It's still all about the drought, and we're still not looking at good rainfall for another full week, at least in the central and south part of the country.
We'll check in with you again next week.
All right, have a good week.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Join us each and every Wednesday here on the Closing Market Report. I'd like you to join us on a Tuesday, the 7th day of March, in Covington, Indiana, by the way, for the All Day Ag Outlook. If you've not registered yet, that's less than 2 weeks away, and you probably ought to get your seat reserved. Register now at willag.org. The cost is just $30. The whole of the Farm Doc team will be there, 10 of the commodity analysts that you hear on the air here at WILL. And we'll have along with us Eric Snodgrass and Mark Cheney. Eric, of course, a meteorologist. Mark with John Deere. Should be a fantastic day. I hope you will join us. The $30 includes your noon hour Beef House meal and coffee and rolls in the morning from the Beef House, too. All online for registration at willag.org and then in person at the Beef House on Tuesday, the 7th day of March.